Alrighty. Alright, so recording has commenced. Welcome to the chat box. My name is Dawn Hewitt. I'm from the International Group, and I'm also a representative on the board for the Global Leadership League. For those of you that have joined us for a chat box previously, we welcome you back. To those that are new to our discussion platform, welcome. The League created this channel, as many of you know, to connect and share and support our community across the international education sector. In the absence of all the conferences and other face-to-face interactions that we're not having these days, the chat box intends to tackle some of the real-time, real-issue learning by providing this platform for empathizing, problem-solving with other League members and beyond the League, which is what we have today, and I'm very excited. Just a few reminders and housekeeping. Please stay muted unless you're participating or contributing to the conversation, just so we don't have any unnecessary background noise. Feel free to interact with us. We want to hear or at least see what you are thinking or feeling in terms of the emojis on the right-hand side of the chat box there. So thumbs up, clapping. If you have any questions as well, you can insert them into that section on the right-hand side. Okay, so I think we have most of 30 people today. All right. I did want to say that, sorry, just double checking. Technology and making this smooth is sometimes challenging, isn't it? Okay, so today I'm absolutely thrilled to be co-facilitating, mainly driving the technology or doing my best to for today's chat box. We had more than 80 registrants for this session, so we'll see how many join us in the end. We have a little over 30 at the moment. We have colleagues joining us from the US, the UK, Malaysia, Australia, and of course, New Zealand. So again, welcome to you all to the chat box for today. Resilient leadership, how to be fierce, kind, and effective on your own terms. We are absolutely thrilled and humbled to have two resilient leaders with us today from the region. I'm jumping out of my skin to hear what they have to say and share with us. The Honorable Caitlin Coe, Consul General, US Consulate in Auckland, and Professor Harlene Hay, the Vice Chancellor from the University of Otago. So without further ado, I'm passing the reins over to the facilitators and they'll take it from here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for this opportunity, Dawn, and thank you for what you're doing and what you're creating and what you're bringing to the world. And thank you to all the participants who signed up and who showed up. We're really excited to have this conversation with you. As Dawn mentioned, I am here as a US diplomat representing America, assigned to New Zealand, and I've been in the diplomatic corps for over 20 years now. But at the heart of, at the core of who I am, I'd say I'm a learner. And so I'm really excited to be here with you, particularly because of the work that you're involved in the space of international education. And so that we can be in a conversation in a learning mode on the very practical, applicable tools that that we hope to give you or to share with you and learn from you about resilient leadership. Because it's regardless of your positional status or power or your positional expertise, the universal applicability of what it means to bounce back, what it means to come back from setbacks and to recover and to stay in the messiness of the recovery, and how you can help others to recover. I think all of that applies just across all the different sectors. And so what I thought we would do today, just bring a little bit structure, is that I would share with you a little bit about myself and ways in which that resilient leadership has shown up, or the ways that I've learned it. And then I'll pass it on to my dear friend and Carla and a mentor, really, because of the ways in which that she has showed up so authentically in her position, how she has shaped that position to be hers in her own terms. And then after that, we will go ahead and break up into different groups so that you'll have an opportunity to to learn from each other and to glean some of the golden nuggets. And then Harlene and I will pop in a different into the different rooms or chat rooms, and then we'll come back together as a group. So I'll start with this. You know, as a mother, as a female leader, as a woman of color, there are many different assets that I think I bring to this conversation as in my current role as a U.S. Consul General. And one of the things that I have right as you're walking into my office is I have taped a hopscotch board onto the carpet of where you enter into my office. And it comes from a Facebook viral video that I'd seen one day where in the midst of a really busy street, I think it was New York City, someone had drawn a chalk, sort of a hopscotch board, and then they taped people to see who would notice it. And many people didn't. They were, on track, on task, ready to go to the next task or next event. And then sure enough, these three burly men, construction men, come walk along. And then the burliest of them all, goes doop, 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 doop. And the other two men like cheer on, And then there's another scene where this guy is by himself and he gets across to the end of the hopscotch and he goes and cheers no one but to himself. And then the third scene is this woman who does the hopscotch, and then she makes eye contact with a stranger coming towards her, and they connect with their eye contact, and then they high five each other and they go to their respective places. And to me, of many different scenes, those three really stood for me, the values around what I hope to cultivate and where I go, wherever I go, which is one, the construction workers, no matter sort of your position, just to be able to, or your, your perception of who you think you are, just to tap into the playfulness, the creativity in you, and to be able to act on that, to give yourself permission to do that. The second one is about celebrating the small victories. How often do we go to the next task or the next win and then forget to just pause and celebrate the small victories? And then maybe in that doing so, that you allow or that you look for other people's small victories to celebrate with them. And then the third one, which I think is really important, most important for me anyway, is it's about connection, right? Rather than it being a transactional relationship, how do I make an effort in all the things moment to moment that it's really grounded in value around staying connected and being in relationship with that person, strangers, contacts, that making that eye contact, that high five, just that deep sense of connection. How do I do that? So I thought, given the time constraint we have, I'll dive right into a very practical tip that I wanted to share with you about that. Being in New Zealand, as you know, the Prime Minister here has demonstrated this so beautifully about how she remains both kind and incredibly fierce, right? That it's assertive and kind somehow. It doesn't seem to go together, and yet I think she has demonstrated that beautifully. And I think an art or secret sauce to that is about establishing really healthy boundaries. And I know many people have talked about boundaries, and in many ways I've seen it as a either or. It's either take care of myself or be thoughtful of others, or it's be real and honest, or you can choose to be kind, or it's about exercising your freedom and autonomy, or it's about being adamant about being connected and connection and belonging. But I think that in fact, there can be a both and to that, that it doesn't always have to be either or. And so a simple and powerful formula of being able to say no while preserving the quality of connection in a relationship, I divide it into three parts. One, the first one is leading with the intention to connect. What does that mean and how does that show up? It means leading with a line or two of genuine empathy, offering your understanding of what matters to this person behind or beyond their request. So that this sends a message that you really care about their needs. If you're unable to say yes, in this moment. So for example, I might lead with, I'm really getting how important this is to you. I'd like to say yes and help out with XXX. Because for me, being a people pleaser, it's really hard for me to stop at and have a wherewithal to be able to come up with these phrases. And so I actually practice them. It's about building muscle memory, right? The second one is about stating your limit or sharing your experience. So it could look like this. Here's what's getting in the way of that right now for me. I don't see how I can make that work, given that I also have a need for that, that, that. It's really focusing on you as opposed to about that person, that personal connection of this is also my need too, right? And then the third one is making a request. It's offering an option. End with a suggestion or request that invites a creative exploration. Could we explore some other options that could work for both of us? Would you like to brainstorm some other ideas that might work for us? Again, lead with the intention to connect. And you can paraphrase that, you know, but again, I emphasize practicing this. Practicing it also with low stakes. Not at that time. And then the second one is stating your limit or sharing your experience, right? Gosh, I would really like to do that, but this is what's preventing me from saying yes to that right now. And then the third one, making a request. How can we both and this? Because I go to that place of either or and black and white. Can you help me to think about both and in this? And so for me, you know, compassionate people ask for what they need. They say no when they need, and when they say yes, they actually really mean it. And so they're compassionate because their boundaries keep them out of resentment. And to me, the biggest lesson for me is about choosing discomfort over resentment, right? Because how often have we said yes and not really meant it and got resentful? So at that moment, it may seem really uncomfortable, but how do I choose to be uncomfortable at this moment for sake of what? For sake of maintaining an honest, clean relationship with the colleagues, with my family, with those around us. And so with that, I, Arlene, you know you and I are big time sticklers, so I actually had a timer on, so I'm just done with my 10 minutes, and I'm gonna hand it off to you, and I can't wait to hear about some of your practical tips and your personal stories.
Kia ora, everyone. And I'd like to add my words of thanks to those of Caitlin, to Dawn, and everyone else who helped to organize this. And I'd like to thank all of the people who've taken time out of their incredibly busy schedules to join us today. It's particularly remarkable that we have folks from all over the world, and hopefully some of the insights that Caitlin and I can share with you about our New Zealand experience will be valuable to you as you are looking at your own leadership journey. As Caitlin said, my name is Harlene Hayne, and I have the privilege of being the Vice Chancellor at the University of Otago. Our main campus is located in Dunedin, New Zealand, which is on the South Island, but we also have campuses in Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch, and Invercargill. We are New Zealand's first university, and just last year we celebrated our 150th anniversary. It is really a pleasure for me to be here today to talk about resilient leadership, particularly with my friend Caitlin. And we know each other because we both serve on the board of Fulbright New Zealand together. So this board is really committed to the relationship between the United States and New Zealand, and it's something that both Caitlin and I are incredibly passionate about. Now, I suspect, like all vice chancellors and presidents of universities around the world, my own leadership has been incredibly challenged by the events of COVID-19. But at the same time, I also think that my skills have been strengthened. And I think I have probably learned more about myself and about my leadership in the last few months than I ever could have in 10 years of leadership training or therapy, for that matter. So one of the grateful moments that I have in the wake of this pandemic is that it has really provided an opportunity for some personal and professional reflection. And what I'd like to do today is to just briefly share with you three of the many leadership lessons that I have learned over the last 6 months of 2020. The first lesson is that, and I'm sure you all know this, that teamwork matters. By many standards, I have a fairly large senior leadership team. I have 12 direct reports who lead both academic and operational portfolios. And prior to COVID-19, this team was working like a well-oiled machine. We were on track for one of our best years in history. Our student recruitment was strong, our teaching and our research were outstanding, and we were in the process of planning our most extensive capital development program in 151 years. Now, although every member of my senior leadership team was performing at a really high level, we often worked a bit like ships in the night. We made decisions in one portfolio in relative isolation to the others. But COVID really changed all that for us. Beginning on March 19th, which was just prior to the level 4 lockdown here in New Zealand, our senior leadership team began meeting daily in 45-minute huddles, where each member of the senior leadership team shared the progress and the roadblocks in their particular portfolio. We made some really big decisions every day, sometimes on the basis of very little information, but we made those decisions together. And in addition to our senior leadership team, those huddles also included our incident controller, an expert in public health, and most importantly, perhaps, our student president. Now, the inclusion of a student voice in our decision making was probably the best decision that I have made this year. In fact, potentially, this is the best decision that I have made in my entire 9 years as a vice chancellor. Having that student voice at the top table meant that students were at the heart of every decision that we made. In addition, bringing a student inside the tent and sharing everything with them, including the university's financial position, meant that he truly understood the challenges that we were facing, which in turn shaped his expectations and those of the wider student community. And each day during lockdown, I watched my team and other teams across the university exhibit every attribute that we try to foster in effective leaders. I saw adaptability, flexibility, ingenuity, and most importantly, perhaps, kindness and some very outstanding collegiality. All of the barriers that we had previously created were gone, and for the first time, we were truly working together as a group. Now that we're out of lockdown in New Zealand, we are currently enjoying a level of freedom on our campus that is rare in the world. And despite this, my senior leadership team has continued to meet frequently. It's no longer daily, we've weaned ourselves down to weekly, but we are continuing to meet in these 45-minute huddles because we all appreciate the value of the teamwork that we enjoyed during lockdown. Now, the second lesson that I learned is that when you're lost in a swamp, you need a compass, not a map. For most university leaders around the world, COVID-19 was the ultimate curveball. All of the roadmaps that we were used to using in decision-making were virtually useless because we were thrown into an incredibly unfamiliar environment where the rules were changing rapidly. At my university, we talked about making decisions in COVID time, which was essentially 48 hours, because every 48 hours, the landscape completely changed and new decisions were required. Now, as many of you will know, universities are not renowned for their rapid decision making. We like to ponder things for a long time. We like to form a working party. We like to set up focus groups, produce a white paper, think about the question some more, talk to the Senate, go back to the beginning and do it all over again. But COVID didn't allow us that kind of luxury of time. Instead, we had to find a new way of working, and we needed a compass, not a roadmap. Fortunately, we figured this out pretty quickly, and our due north had two poles. We were committed to supporting our students through outstanding online teaching and pastoral care. And we were committed to supporting our staff by saving as many jobs as we possibly could. So once we had that compass, our decisions became infinitely easier. Each potential option was considered against that compass. Now, not every decision that we made was perfect, but it was consistent with the values that we had set for ourselves and for the university. And that's something about which I am incredibly proud. And the final lesson that I want to share with you that we learned about during the COVID pandemic is that universities matter. As Caitlin mentioned, one hallmark of New Zealand's response to COVID-19 is that it's been led by the Prime Minister and it's been evidence-based. And much of that evidence that the Prime Minister has used in her decision-making has been provided by academic experts here at the University of Otago. Experts across this university provided advice to the government on a wide range of topics, including diagnosis, containment, and the contact tracing of COVID-19. Other experts are currently working on a vaccine. In addition to that kind of medical expertise, other academic experts across the university were providing high-level response and commentary on the impact of the pandemic on the disability sector, on the economy, on mental health, on tourism, on Maori, and on politics. And interestingly enough, when the country was running short on hand sanitizer or swabs, academic experts at Otago set up manufacturing operations, providing these incredibly valuable resources to our essential workers. Now, our experience over the last 6 months has underscored the valuable contribution that university research and expertise can make to the world in which we all live. Going forward at my university, we will continue to be guided by our motto, Sapere Aude, which means dare to be wise. We will continue to assist where we can in the fight against COVID, and we will look forward to contributing to New Zealand's recovery. We will also continue to conduct world-class research in a wide range of areas, and we will use the outcome of that research to continue to solve other big challenges facing our communities, our country, and the rest of the world. So in closing, this pandemic has been the ultimate disruptor. At my university, we've experienced periods of both fear and frustration. At the same time, however, we have also learned that we are bolder and braver than we ever imagined. We've stepped outside our ivory tower, rolled up our sleeves, and then helped save a nation from the devastation of COVID-19. Like all universities, we now have a very large financial hole to fill. But with our team, our compass, and our academic expert, I am confident that we will forge a path of excellence, confronting whatever challenges this virus continues to throw at us. So I'd like to end my remarks today with a very brief Maori proverb, He waka eka noa, which means we're all in this together. Essentially, the biggest lesson that COVID has taught my university is about the value of community. And we are hoping to hold on to that sense of community as we continue to work through our recovery. Thank you very much.
That's great, thank you so much. You know, Brené Brown talks about how watching her daughter play soccer, and one of the terms that she uses as a leadership moment is settling the ball. I don't know if you've heard of it, but she's out there watching her daughter play soccer, and you know, these soccer balls are coming at her daughter like, you know, shoulder high, and she's just aiming at that ball, trying to kick it up, you know, putting her legs up as high as she could. But what she really needed to do at the moment was to settle the ball, right? And how often during COVID-19, we try to aim high and kick and, you know, but maybe it's about that, you know, slow is fast, right? Absolutely. To settle within and to tap into the inner resource that you have within you. And so what we'd like to do is to have you break out into groups and to share about some of the inner resources that you bring. And it's not just about acquisition of new skills, but it's getting really clear about the value that you bring, that your heart's gladness and the world's greatest hunger, where they, that magical intersection, where they meet, and how you can access that in ways that sticks, right? what I mean by that, to the earlier point of resilient leadership, is it's not going to be like I am living to my calling every day. No, but the times when that magical intersection doesn't happen, how do you recalibrate? How do you reset? How do you come back to it? And so I really look forward to hearing from you guys based on some of the questions, the guide questions that we have put together for you. And I think Dawn is going to do her magic by assigning you to different groups. And as I mentioned, Harlene and I will pop in into the different groups and hopefully listen in, and so that we can, when we come back together, we can moderate a robust conversation about some of the key takeaways.
Great. Thank you to both of you. Just technically, I'm just having some trouble copying and pasting the questions into the actual chat feed. So I just wanted to let you know that I'm going to be breaking you up into five groups, and that each of your groups will have a different question. So if you have that handout, I've made it available on the right-hand side. If you could just mark these quickly, sorry, this is the best I'm probably gonna do to make it time friendly here, is number one, group number one will have, how do you balance the intersection that exists between living your core value whilst fulfilling the expectation of your field? So if you can find that, I'm not sure which number that is. Sorry, I'll just see if I can get these.
Number one.
Is that number one? Okay. Number two, as it relates to learning, what's the one thing do you foster? So that's also number two. Three, as it relates to connecting. So three, these are in order. I wasn't sure if they were. As it relates to learning, as it relates to connecting. So they're all in order. For some of the specific ways that you have advocated for change that reflect the realities of the 21st century, that's number four. And number five is how have you successfully managed the interplay that exists between who you are and how you see others? So I hope that, apologies for the clunkiness in presenting that information, but what I will do right now is I will be allocating you each to a breakout room. I encourage you to share and discuss those topics. Everyone's back. Can everyone hear me? Yeah, thumbs up. All right, great. I hope that we all had some really good conversations. I popped into a couple along the way. I might ask our facilitators to take the lead again to see what sort of conversations they were a part of, and invite them to spark the conversation amongst the rest of the group.
Okay, well, maybe I'll get started. Caitlin and I, because we're both a little bit technologically challenged, ended up in the same chat room, which we stayed in for the entire time. So we had the opportunity of having some really in-depth insight into the group that we were with. And it was fantastic, actually. We had representation from both the US and from New Zealand in our group. And I don't know about the others, but the two things that I took away from what people talked about was, one of the things for us that COVID has done is that it's pushed us out of a cycle of competition, and that much of what we do in a daily basis is to try to be better and faster and more competitive with someone or some other organization. And COVID has really forced us not to do that and work more towards the common good. Whether it was Bronwyn Kelly from Universities New Zealand talked about developing a database of research across not only universities, but the Crown Research Institutes and other kinds of experts that was publicly available when people needed it. And Whitney and Nicole, who are both involved in the international student space, you know, talked about how really their biggest challenge was getting students home and then trying to provide really good experiences for students going forward, where study abroad isn't a thing right now. And it's such a fundamental part of what we typically do in universities. And for me, I guess the big insight as an American living offshore was the comment about how the Black Lives Matter movement has almost trumped the problem with COVID in the US, which, given that COVID consumes every waking minute of our lives in New Zealand, that was really, it was very disturbing, but very enlightening to hear how broken race relations are in the US, which is sad. And hopefully we'll see the end of that shortly.
I would love to hear from those of you who are part of group one, some of the highlights that you are able to share with each other and some of the key takeaways.
I was kind of the note taker for group one because I'm very early in my career. So I just sat and took notes from everybody. We were talking about the intersection between living your core value and fulfilling the expectation of your field. And it really, the whole conversation really centered around open and transparent communication. And a lot of us agreed that we got into this field because it already aligned with a lot of our core values. So that made balancing the intersection quite easy. We also talked about collaboration over competition and just approaching it with leading in such a collaborative manner. That was mostly what we covered.
Yeah.
You know, it reminds me, I have a screensaver in my desk, and it's a picture of a tip of a cruise ship that sort of appears out from a building where my office looks out in. And being part of government, there are so many days that I'm banging my head against the wall, and I'm sure you guys in the academic field can also relate to this, just, you know, the sheer bureaucracy and the length of time that it takes to get things done. And you know, when I hear the sound of a cruise ship, I know that it's signaling that it's turning. And when I look up 5 minutes later, it's still there at the tip of the building. It's, you know, because of the massive size of it, it takes forever for that cruise ship to turn. And boy, there's so often times when I feel like I'd rather be in a jet ski, you know, to make that swift turn, because I know exactly that that's where it needs to go. You know, that's the right thing to do. And yet we're in the business of turning cruise ships around, right? With a bigger platform and bringing with us thousands of people and their minds and their values. And so just that incremental reminder that I have, the physicality of looking at that screensaver, it gives me that inch of hope every day to just hang on, you know, stay on.
Absolutely.
How about group number two?
Do we have representatives from group two? Who was the note taker?
Yeah, I can chat.
Kelsey.
And this was the question, as it relates to learning, what's the one thing you do to foster your lifelong learning mindset? And I guess, like, speaking from my perspective, I'm relatively young. And I think all of us agreed in our group that we're all just naturally curious human beings and that we're not afraid of not knowing things. And I feel like COVID has really opened up the idea that we don't know anything. Like, experts, the people we look up to in leadership, we're all in the same boat. So it's better to be open to not knowing a whole lot and embracing your curiosity. And I think most of us that are in education, we have that innate curiosity. And Chandra in our group, if you don't mind unmuting yourself, she had this like really, really great quote. Could you share, do you know which one I'm talking about, Chandra?
I think so, if I can capture, re-saying it again. The more you learn, the less you realize you know. So it's the idea that as you become more educated or more knowledgeable, you actually tend to underestimate how much you know, because you realize there's so much more out there to learn. And there's a tendency for people that don't know very much to overestimate actually how much they know. So it's reaching that tipping point of realizing that you've got lots to learn still.
Yeah, and I guess in the COVID lens is that we all really feel like, I feel sometimes like I'm drowning in the fact that I don't know anything, but that's actually where our resilience and the skills that we already have within us are going to come to play. And like, we shouldn't be afraid of that, and we should use those even if we think that they don't matter at the time.
I think too, it's an important skill. You're lucky. You said that you're just starting out, Chelsea, and Chandra, I can see, you know, there's a lot of young women on here, that it's good that you learn that lesson early, that you don't have to know everything, because I think one of the biggest mistakes you can make as a leader is to pretend that you actually do know all of the answers. If that's going to be the stance that you take, you will be shown to be the fool. And it's just so much better to understand the limits of what you do know, and to recognize that there are a whole host of other things you don't know, but someone else does know. And, you know, I think it goes back to surrounding yourself with people who have knowledge and expertise that is different from your own, and being willing to learn from those people. And it feeds into your own leadership. It doesn't challenge your ability to be a leader. It actually makes you be a better one in the end.
There's so many ways that you lead differently because of the uniqueness of who you are. And I'm reminded of a situation when I was an entry-level officer. A senior leader invited me over to his house and my husband for dinner. And there was a patch of land that was, you know, in his courtyard. And he said, oh, I need to do something about that. So in my it was just littered with trash. And I thought in my head, what is he going to do? Put like a little picket fence that says, you know, do not litter. So a few weeks later, we're invited over to his house. And sure enough, that patch of land, there was not a single shred of litter or trash. What he had done was he actually turned that plot of land into this beautiful flower garden, and no one dared to litter that beautiful space. And so often in our line of work, we choose the expedient, we choose the punitive, right? Get things done. So do not litter, picket signs, answers. But it's that creative, resourceful from within, because of who he was and the essence of who he was, that he was able to find a space, a different way of getting to that outcome that felt authentic to him. And so just getting really deep and clear about what is that value addedness? What is a garden that I can create within my sphere of influence, right? Again, back to the both and, as opposed to either or, how can I both and this, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's a really good insight, Caitlin. No, I was just gonna say question three.
I think I took some notes. Is it okay for my colleagues if I go ahead quickly? Mary, okay, everybody, great. This was about what's the one thing you do to invest in your relationships? And of course, Sarah asked a great question, was, are we talking about personal or professional relationships? And I see Michelle's young daughter and I see other kids. And so one of the things about COVID and our Zoom space is that some of those have been combined. And I have to say, I love seeing the dogs, the kittens, and the kids. It's just really great. So so we talked about what are a few things that we do. One is just making sure that things aren't transactional to invest in relationships. We also know that, you know, some people are very outcome driven, and they like quick responses and just to get things done. So the balance of that space versus prioritizing a chance to invest in those relationships. We talked a lot about inclusion and the idea of what's an investment is to inclusion, meaning to go to them, you know, whether it's your staff, whether it's your friends, to be able to not sit only in your space, but to move your space to include others. And I thought that was really important as we talk about intercultural learning, and we as interculturalists, always looking at other cultures, where people are coming from and what they need to navigate that. We talked about prioritizing. One of the things is just, how do you invest? You prioritize it. You reach out to somebody every day. You send a quick text. Somebody also had a great idea of remembering the one personal thing about those professional relationships to be able to ask. And I started off, I'm a high extrovert. And so I think that this thing about investing in relationships comes really easy to me, but to always remember that where people get their energy are from different places. So those are just a few things that great ideas that everybody came up with.
That's great, Sarah. And I mean, I do really resonate with the comment that you made about how being on Zoom has opened up the nature of the relationships we have with our colleagues. So we've now seen their homes and their children and their pets in a way that we never would have seen beforehand. And I think across my university, I've seen that it's really fostered more interpersonal relationships between work colleagues because they now know more about each other than they would have ever known before. And for me, one of the biggest sort of poignant moments through all of this at my university has been that our chief operating officer is a father of four children, and his wife was a nurse, so she was an essential worker. So he was operating the entire operations of the university while looking after four children, the youngest of which was two. And so oftentimes during our complex Zoom meetings, he would be there with a baby on his shoulder. And I thought, you know, this is a great example of, you know, so many different things about balancing work and family, about gender roles, about, you know, who is caring and loving. And I think we've all had a chance, you know, in this weird world that we've lived in, to see the best sides of some of our colleagues that would have been completely shrouded from us prior to this experience. So despite all the horrible things about the pandemic, for me, I think it is important that we all reflect on a few of the blessings that have come about. And for me, that's definitely been one of the blessings that I will take forward from this.
Thank you all so much. As you are probably all identifying the time right now, I think we could continue this conversation. I have thoroughly enjoyed hearing everyone's perspectives. How human were the messages that we shared today? I'm so grateful and thankful to both of our facilitators for taking the time out. You are in really high profile, big roles, and sharing your perspectives. And I'll look at all those clapping hands. I can't express my gratitude enough on behalf of the league. I'd also like to thank Sarah Spencer for being part of this meeting, this conversation, and the wonderful Katie Sleeman, who actually made this happen. Without her, I wouldn't. There she is. She's an absolute rock star and a great connector. So thank you so much. I want to just encourage you all to take a look at the upcoming chat boxes as well. We have one of our upcoming facilitators, Haley Shields, is in this meeting right there waving. And Haley will be talking to us about living your best life and leading with authenticity. That will be next on the 9th of July and advertised in the next few days. So keep an eye out for that. The audio recording will be available on our website probably in about a week's time from this session today. So please feel free to go back and hear some of those.